The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
And here we are. Welcome to a Wednesday afternoon. I'm not sure if we're on Progressive Voices or not. So here's the deal. About, I don't know, 15 minutes ago, the sound went dead. The network went dead. And I of course, jump on the texting machine and I get in touch with George, who is the Progressive Voices Network guy, technical guy, and we're going back and forth trying to figure out. I rebooted my zip unit, which is what gets my sound to the stream guys who send it to TuneIn, and it goes through the whole thing. And you know, and then and that came back up and still had no audio, and so no sound. Oh, I see. What? Hold on one second. No sound on YouTube. We'll fix that. Yeah, you know, can't win for losing. Okay, hold on. Here we go. All right, now you should have sound. YouTube, sound will be there. So I'm talking about how I'm not sure that we're up on the Progressive Voices Network and YouTube had no sound. But we have sound. It's okay. We're good. That was just an operator error on my part. Anyway, so people start coming into the YouTube chat room before the show started, and they tell me that Randy Rhodes lost power. So, yeah. No, I'm back. It's coming. It'll be here. It's coming. I have no way to tell. Okay, now we're on. Got it. Sorry, that YouTubers, that was my fault. That was my issue. I was explaining that the Progressive Voices, I'm not sure if we're there or not. You know what? Let me do one other quick thing here so that if we're not on Progressive Voices, hopefully this will do the trick. I don't know. Yeah. So apparently Randy Rhodes lost power and all right. If I don't know, I have no idea. I guess we'll find out soon enough. I'm on. Okay. George tells me I'm on. So hi everybody. Sorry for the rocky start, but here we are. Welcome to a Wednesday, and boy, what a Wednesday it is. We have a guest coming on. Let me tell you who it is. And it's somebody who was just here. Well, it seems like just the other day, but it was a month ago already when Brian Karam was here. Brian Karam, White House correspondent who worked for Playboy when we first met him. Playboy doesn't exist anymore, but he's still a White House correspondent who does, he writes, I think, I forget what where he's published now, maybe Salon, but better than that, he's got his own podcast, Just Ask the Question. He's got a new book out called Free the Press. And this morning I saw he tweeted out that he has a movie, a new film out that is Amazon Prime. So I watched it this afternoon and it's really good. And what it is 2 years ago. Do you realize that this, like last week, 2 years ago last week is when everything shut down? Do you believe it's been that long? So I remember March 22nd of 2020, I had been volunteering at the Broward County Animal Shelter. They called it Broward Animal Care and Adoption Center. Help every weekend I would go for like the previous year to try to help get these dogs adopted. And we knew the shutdown was coming. Many, many cities and states had already shut down and we were, you know, going day by day. And on the Saturday, which I think was March 21st, they told us we had to leave early, because of the COVID stuff. We came back Sunday and Sunday at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they said that the 22nd of March, they said, that's it. We're done. We're closed. Everything's on lockdown. Go home. And that was the last day that I went to the animal shelter. And so since then, I've mostly been home. Now, here we are 2 years later, right? So we're into the third year of the pandemic now. And it's not over. It's not over. You know, cases are going up. There's a new variant of Omicron, go figure. And cases are spiking. In fact, it's hit the White House. The first gentleman got it. Jen Psaki got it. Then Karine St-Pierre got it, who was the deputy press secretary. So now today, the press briefing was done by Kate Benningfield. She's the White House communications director. So they're on the third string now to do the press briefing because COVID is still rampant. So why are people, you know, pretending it's over? I know it's wishful thinking, but wanting something doesn't make it so. So now's the time to, you know, to be very careful. Okay. So anyway, everything is just foobar. So, and why should, you know, why should the world be any different? Let me tell you, what, you know, I just saw a tweet a few minutes ago from Alvin Bragg. You know who Alvin Bragg is, right? Alvin Bragg is the Manhattan district attorney. He's the one who succeeded Cy Vance. Cy Vance, who had an investigation into the Trump Organization that was going full steam, right? Until Alvin Bragg came in and apparently stopped it, making two career prosecutors who were heading up this case resign in protest. One of them published a letter in the New York Times talking about the travesty of it all. I should pull that up and see if I can find it. Anyway, Bragg, his Twitter handle is @ManhattanDA. And he just tweeted out, "Today we return two antiquities to the people of Libya that were looted from the ancient city of Cyrene. We will not allow Manhattan to be a hub for trafficked antiquities and will continue to crack down on this illegal activity." To which I responded, what about the crook that occupied the White House for 4 years? Where's the indictment for Trump? And I followed that up with, who paid you off? Because what else could it be, right? Look, we are staring down the abyss. I'm not gonna torture you with Shucktode, but I just, you know, going through the various different news aggregator sites, I came across one that has a clip of said Shucktode, and now I can't find it. But basically, here it is: shellacking territory. Chuck Toad says Biden polls show big trouble for Democrats in midterms. This is serious. And if the Democrats don't do something, and I mean soon, to turn this around, Joe Biden, I don't even want to think about what this country is going to look like. Not just a year from now, but, you know, 3 years from now. It's terrifying. Terrifying. So no, we don't want to go there. No, we really don't. Yeah. So let me check in with the chair. I got off. I'm discombobulated now because, you know, of the technical difficulties at the beginning, although all is fine. And again, Brian Karam will be here sometime. I told him come in whenever he wants, although I think he's going to be here at 5:30 because I haven't heard from him since I said come back earlier. Because the reason, look, so Brian Karam, I told you, has this movie out. I'll play the trailer for you in a minute because it's really good. But he also, if you remember when he was on with us just a month ago, he was getting ready to go to Ukraine. And he did. He left for Ukraine. He's gone. He went and he's back. So I want to talk to him about all of it. I want to find out about his trip and talk about the movie. And I still haven't finished his book. So yeah. It's a good thing we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about. You know, here's the problem. We talked about this yesterday, and the phone lines are open. Should anyone care to join in this dialogue with me, 954-889-6410, or you can Skype in to at Nicole Sandler, all one word. I don't know if our buddy Nevitz is back today. I guess I scared him off. You know, how dare I say, come talk to me about the things you're saying in the chat room. Let's have this discussion in the open. But I guess I'm intimidating in that way. I don't mean to be. Sorry. I would like to have that discussion. But here's the problem. We have the former guy doesn't know when to shut his fucking mouth. So he goes on some two-bit, I call it two-bit, right? Some online show, I don't know what it is, and does another Russia, if you're listening moment. Really, the first time is, you know, find the Hillary Clinton emails. And of course, it was the following week that Trump heard from WikiLeaks, right? So now he's saying, well, let me just play for you. Sorry, this runs a minute and 27 seconds. I'm not going to play any more than I need to. But, saved by the phone call. Hi, who's this?
This is PJ.
Hey, PJ. Ah. It's PJ again. Hi, PJ.
Yes, ma'am. I called on Monday.
Yeah.
And if you recall, our conversation was about the so-called gaffe that President Biden made about regime change.
Right.
Okay. Well, I am over 70 years old, and I watch your show, as I said, every day, and I contribute money to you.
Well, thank you very much.
Whenever I can.
I appreciate that.
But
uh-oh.
I was offended.
Uh-oh.
I was offended.
Yeah.
By your harsh and hostile treatment of me and the way you cursed at me.
Did I curse at you?
My wife was appalled.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I cursed at you. You know, I have a potty mouth. I didn't mean to curse at you, and I'm sorry that I did. And I thought we ended the phone call okay.
We did.
Right.
Yes, we did.
Okay.
But I would suggest that you wait until the caller makes his or her point before you use your temper.
Okay. That's reasonable.
I'm just saying,
I hear you. And PJ, just so you know, a few listeners chimed in on your behalf. I got a few nasty emails saying, shut up and let the guy talk. So, you know, well, I hear it.
Because I've called Tom Hartman, I've called Randy, and I've never been treated to such harsh and hostile vitriol.
Well, here's the thing. They're both over the air, and they can't say fuck, which,
yeah,
you know.
I understand. But they always treat their callers courteous.
No. Oh, wait a minute, PJ. I'm sorry. I got to disagree with you there. Tom Hartman, absolutely. Randy Rhodes is not kind to her listeners, to her callers. So
she never curses.
Because she's over the air. She can't.
I understand that. But the cursing never has a place.
Well,
I don't think.
I understand, but
even if you disagree with a person, you shouldn't be cursing at them. Otherwise, you won't get any more callers.
Well,
this is just my suggestion.
I got you.
I like you. I watch you all the time, and I never miss a show. And like I say, I contribute it when I can. And I'm pleased that you're on the air. I really like you.
Well, thank you.
And,
I meant no offense. I was pretty emotional. I was pretty angry on Monday. So yeah, and you know me, I let it all out. What you're getting from me is the truth, and it's unfiltered and it's real.
I understand.
And I'm not. I'm not bound by the FCC's ridiculous rules that you can't talk on the air the way you talk in real life. But your point is well taken, PJ. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. Have a nice show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. So that was PJ. And I get it. Look, I get, you know, I care. So I curse and I rant occasionally. And I've got strong opinions, but that's why you do listen. And I'm sorry to PJ's wife. I didn't mean to curse him out. It was a thing on Monday. I was angry about a lot of stuff. I'm not so angry today. Actually, I am. I'm really pissed off. I'm more worried than pissed. Because of a million things, but mostly the media framing of the polling numbers right now that, you know, Joe Biden is losing to Donald Trump. Wait a minute. We still have the midterms to come before we get to the presidential election in 2024. And granted, things don't look great for the Democrats right now in November. but it's March. Well, it's almost April. Democrats better get their shit together. Otherwise, we are looking at a situation I don't want to even think about. But I see our guest has arrived, and I'm very glad he's here early because we've got so much to talk about. Brian Karam, first of all, welcome. Oh, hold on. Why do I have sound coming through this monitor? Hold on. I got to turn down the sound on your. There we go. Okay, now I can bring Brian in without hearing myself coming back. I hate it when that happens. So, Brian Karam, you were just here. It was like a month ago. But we can't get enough of you. Thank you for joining us again.
Well, what the fuck?
What the fuck? Really? So when we last spoke, though, you were on your way to Ukraine. You were leaving to go to Ukraine. I was telling you about my friend Tanya, the woman that I met at the hostel. She owns the hostel called Friends Forever in the middle of Kyiv. And she and her husband had escaped Kyiv, and they were in some... a little village and the whole thing. And then you left, you went to Ukraine. So first tell me how your trip was.
It was a trip. It was interesting. It was important to see. I think it was important to see people in that environment who live there. I had relied, as most of us do, on the reporting going on from over there. And a lot of that reporting had a lot to do with officials and had a lot to do with, you know, what, military officials and civil officials were saying, and I wanted to just meet and talk to people. And so it was a very eye-opening experience. Those people are very salty.
Salty.
You're getting grief for cussing. Those people are just out of it, man. They have it's our land. We live on it. You'll live on, you know, you can live beneath it. I mean, they have posters everywhere disparaging Putin there. I ran into a farmer about 40 miles southwest of Kyiv who told me, I hear Americans have many guns, bring them over here. We'll kill a lot of Russian bears.
Wow.
There, you know, farmers were carting away the tanks of the Russian military when they had left them abandoned. And so, you know, the running joke was, what's the best way to defeat a Russian tank? Park it in the woods. You know, and then, you know, there was another one that was out that was, you know, the greatest single provider of military hardware to Ukraine since February 24th is the Russian army. I mean, these people are salty and they are not going to go gentle into that goodnight. And I was sitting in a restaurant on the seventh floor of a hotel overlooking Lviv. And it occurred to me as I sat there, Putin cannot conquer this country. He can't. Mm-hmm. He can level it. He can try to destroy it. But these people don't want to be part of Russia, and they're not going to be part of Russia, and he can't win the war. I don't think there's any way Russia comes out of this ahead. I think the economic sanctions have strangled him irreparably. I think the Russian people will suffer because of it. I think Ukraine will come out of it with a higher profile and much better off. Although Mariupol will be years before it's back to normal. I find that to be very similar to Bastogne during World War II, the Battle of the Bulge. It was a crossroads, and to capture it was a Russian aim, or a German aim during World War II in order to be successful. And that's the same way Mariupol is with Russia today. To capture it would enable Putin to link up his forces on the east and his forces in the south. It's not going to happen. And I think it's going to be more death and more destruction. And then, of course, there's the Russian hit squads that are targeting reporters. We were tagged a couple of times. We were chased a couple of times, followed a couple of times.
Really?
Yeah. And that, you know, I didn't stick around. I said in a column, I said I didn't know whether they wanted to kill me or kidnap me or take me to a mixer, but I wasn't sitting around to find out. Either way, I was out of there.
Yeah, because they're killing people. And the stories we heard from Mariupol too, a couple of journalists who stuck it out there thinking we need to be here to tell the stories, they went looking for them and the Ukrainians hid them.
Yeah, that's because Putin isn't afraid of getting hit by a bullet. He's afraid by getting hit by the video that'll show his war crimes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, and that's what he's doing. And look, just the fact that we know the name of the town, Mariupol, is, and what happened there, and that they bombed that this building that said children on both sides, and, you know, hundreds of people were killed in there. It's just sickening.
Well, I interviewed a family from there who lived right across the street from that theater.
Oh, my God.
And they lost friends. And in fact, the father that I spoke with, they had to leave a communal bomb shelter to help bury some of the people who were killed, and they buried them in their own front yard so later they could be identified.
But
he said to walk out of the bomb shelter was to invite death. And he watched him destroy that. He watched the Russian army destroy his apartment complex floor by floor by floor. Started at the top, ended at the bottom, and they had to get out. There was nothing left of it. Mariupol has been reduced to rubble.
Oh, it's sickening. I have a friend who was born in Ukraine, in Odessa, in Soviet Ukraine. Her family escaped when she was 8 years old. She now lives over here. You may even know her or know of her, Larissa Alexandrovna, who years ago, she was a reporter / blogger, like in the early days of the mm-hmm. blogosphere. She was a managing editor of Raw Story, but she, when she was 8 years old, her family escaped. And she came on with me. We talked for an hour about being, you know, raised there and what it was like under Soviet rule. And although she's fully American, I mean, she's lived here for many years, she, you know, her heart is breaking. And the pictures that she shared of the beauty of that city, and it goes back centuries, Ukraine, you know, earlier than Russia.
Well, yeah, that's one of the reasons why they're really angry is that, you know, there was a civilization in Kyiv, and it was the people of that area who built Russia.
Yeah.
So Moscow was founded after Kyiv. And I mean, Kyiv is, like I said, these are salty people. I mean, you know, you've got people that, you know, Attila the Hun slept here. You know, so, you know, we have Washington slept here. They have Attila the Hun slept
right.
here. I mean, these people have been at the crossroads of many an international situation like this. They ain't going anywhere. I mean, you haven't really lived till you've gone to southern Ukraine and seen, you know, people still riding around in horse-drawn carriages, bringing their wares home and heating their homes with firewood and right. not having electricity. And you can't defeat those people.
No.
Yes, I'm sorry.
You know, maybe Putin was, you know, watched what happened at the end of our occupation of Afghanistan and saw how quickly it fell, right? Because they weren't, the people of Afghanistan, I guess, don't have the same feeling for their country that the Ukrainians do for theirs. The fact that they just rolled over and gave up and said, just here, you know.
Well, I think part of the Ukrainian resistance, look, Putin is a genius in this way. No one had been able to unite NATO like Putin.
That's true, right?
And no one has been able to unite Ukraine like Putin. And Ukraine was a very divisive nation. But the moment Zelensky stood in that bunker and to the offer of leaving said, I don't need a ride. I need ammunition.
That was it.
That emboldened the entire world.
Yeah.
Look, we all love the Rebel Alliance. Nobody likes the evil empire. Right. And here was a guy with pluck saying, no, go to hell. I'm staying. And so that rallied his people. It is a reason why I've seen international companies over there, easily 2 or 3 dozen, trying to provide food, shelter, and first aid, not to mention training, military mm-hmm. training to the people living in Ukraine. These people are resolute, they're
yes.
resilient, and they won't lose.
I just sent an article to, I told you, my friend who the who owns the hostel in Kyiv, she and her husband, it's just the two of them, they left, they went out to a village somewhere, a remote village, that got bombed, and then they moved to a city, and finally, a friend of hers joined them, a friend, her husband, and a little boy, 5-year-old little boy, and finally, the men convinced the women to go. So they got out. They went to Poland. But my friend, her name is Tanya, she is heartbroken. She said, I've been with my husband for 10 years. We've never been apart for more than 15 days. And she's worried sick about him, but he can't leave because men under the age of 60, from 18 to 60, can't go. So they got to Poland. She said the people in Poland were amazing. she couldn't believe the generosity and the warmth and the wonderfulness. But her sister lives in Dubai. So her sister sent her three tickets, and she and her friend and the little boy went to Dubai. She's beside herself right now, not understanding how people can just go about their lives. They go to parties, they go to dinner, they're living life as if nothing's happening. And she said, meanwhile, my country is being destroyed and my husband is in danger and I just want to go home. My heart breaks for her.
Yeah, mine too. I mean, I sat in a press conference, a Zoom press conference with the mayor of Kyiv, and he said, look, this is the largest battle, this is the largest war in Europe since the end of World War II. And if you think it doesn't affect you, you're wrong. It does affect all of us, but the farther away you get from it, the more it's hard, the harder it is to relate to it.
Yeah.
I felt the same way when I came back from the Gulf War. I remember I had carried around my gas mask for so many weeks. And then I stopped into Harrods in London and I couldn't take it off. And I just reveled seemed remarkable to me that people could go about their daily business, not worried about being, having bombs dropped on them. And I felt kind of the same way coming back this time from Ukraine. For 10 days, I couldn't get a good night's rest because the air raid sirens would go off every hour, every 45 minutes. And so, you have to kind of disconnect and when you get back and relax a little bit and realize it's not the same. But unfortunately, I don't think people understand yet how desperate the situation is there and how how very dangerous and volatile it is.
Without a doubt. And, just communicating one-on-one with this woman, she's my, my person there. So I can't deal with having to think about 44 million people. If I can concentrate on one person, at least I can put my energies. It's just my coping mechanism. But seeing how much pain she's in, and we text through the Telegram app every day, and she's just hurting so much. And I know all the people that are there, it's devastating. So 10 days there, did you shoot video? Are you putting together a project?
We shot Russians, I'm telling you. We started putting together a documentary on it. I've been writing articles for, a Salon and a couple of other places about it. It's, I think when all is said and done, it will be a turning point in our history.
Oh,
I think the next 30 to 60 days, in fact, will determine the next 200 years of history if we don't manage to blow ourselves up.
Yeah, well, we're hurting on a number of fronts because what's going over there is tragic. And yes, it will impact our future no matter what happens. And then what's happening in Washington is frightening as well. Before you came on, before I took the phone call that, rightly so, giving me a rash of shit, which I deserved, I guess. I was about to play a clip that just stunned me. And nothing should stun me about the former guy anymore. You've had your run-ins with him. It's how we got to know and love you, Brian Karam. But he did it again. He did it. He gave us another Russia, if you're listening, moment. He went on some show and he wants
Hunter Biden's info
here's what he said. Sorry to offend your ears, but here's what he said. I'm batting 1,000 today. I think the gremlins are I think my mouse just died. Hold on.
I'm telling you, tough room,
Really? Hey, it's like if it's not one thing, it's another. It's always something. Okay, here we go.
As long as Putin now is not exactly a fan of our country, let him explain because Chris Wallace wouldn't let me ask the question.
God.
Why did the mayor of Moscow's wife give the Bidens, both of them, $3.5 million? That's a lot of money.
Okay, well, this is unsubstantiated and bullshit,
she gave
probably.
$3.5 million.
Okay, we don't know that.
So now I would think Putin would know the answer to that. I think you should research it. I think we should know that.
Well, but because what he said is Putin, to give us the information, if he's got it, he should want to give it to us. So again, he's asking Putin for dirt to interfere with politics here in the U.S.
He's basically kissing Putin's ass, as he always has. Donald Trump is a traitor to America. I'm not going to repeat anything he says anymore. I can't wait to see him arrested or otherwise removed from the public view. I cannot fathom that man in any way, shape, or form being able to draw breath outside of a padded cell. And I think his cellmate ought to be Vladimir Putin. Oh. The two of them deserve each other. To be stuck in a deep, dark hole somewhere and fed nothing but mushrooms and sour soup for the rest of their life.
I couldn't have said it better myself. You're absolutely right. And I want to see him in an orange jumpsuit to see which is more orange, the jumpsuit or his skin.
I'm going to go for green on the jumpsuit color. That's a federal prison color. Oh. And orange is state and local, and I'd rather see him in a federal prison.
Okay. All right. I'll defer to you on that one. So Brian Karam. So this morning, I'm making my usual rounds of the interwebs, and I'm reading stuff and reading Twitter. And I know, okay, so you've got the podcast. It's justaskthequestion.com. You've got book, Free the Press, which is a great book that everyone should listen to.
Buy early and buy often.
There you go. And now you also have a movie out, a film that's available to watch on Amazon Prime. And it's called 6 Feet Apart.
Yes, ma'am.
And I watched it today and I loved it. It was, you know, this week I was talking about at the beginning, we are 2 years out from the start of the lockdown. More than 2 years from the start of the pandemic, but we got off to a rocky start because of a certain former guy who, you know, botched the entry, right?
Yes.
Do you think if someone responsible, someone with half a brain, someone who understood the way government works and supposed to work, were in power at the beginning of the pandemic, that things might have been gone differently here in the U.S.?
Well, the documentary shows the early days of from the day one of the national federal lockdown till, you know, like maybe 2 weeks later.
Yep.
And we went from having 11 cases and no deaths to leading the world in cases and deaths in that short amount of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we had someone else in charge, I mean, you got Trump, and these are his words. It's another Democratic hoax. We have 11 cases. They're all getting better. Peter Alexander from NBC asked him a question about people that were afraid, he lit into Peter Alexander.
I remember that moment so clearly. And when you brought it up in the movie again, it's like, oh my God, yes. That was one of those really absurd moments.
Yeah, and I ended it. I started it, you know, I decided to do this because I had gone out west to take some time off to go to my son's wedding, which got postponed because of the pandemic. They later went into a smaller ceremony instead of having hundreds. There were dozens. But we decided that, you know, the flights were all canceled and I had this rental car. I had to get back to the coast. So I said, well, let's just shoot a documentary traveling from L.A. to D.C., and talk to people and find out, A, if you could get tested as readily as the president said you could, and that was a lie. And then to see how divisive was this pandemic and how were people coping with it. And in the early days of the pandemic, it was rather heartwarming to see that people, no matter what they believed or who they believed in, were kind to one another. And that was encouraging.
Yeah.
Then we end it getting back to the White House and me in a press conference in the Rose Garden. And Trump, I'm just quoting the people that I've talked to who said they can't get tested. They're not distancing because he wasn't distancing. And he kept telling me to shut up encouraged. He said, if I didn't shut up, he was going to leave. I didn't shut up. He didn't leave.
Right. No, we remember that so clearly. But if it's okay with you, I want to play the trailer so people can get a little taste of it. Because again, this is 6 Feet Apart, the new documentary from Brian Karam. It's available on Amazon Prime. And here's the trailer.
On February 28th, as Trump left for a rally, I asked about the growing concerns of the coronavirus.
He ignored my question to talk about his rally that night.
The virus looks like by April, you know, in theory, when it gets a little warmer, it miraculously goes away. Oh.
We only have 11 cases and they're all getting better.
I meant a road trip to check and see if the president had any idea what was really going on in America, and what did America want to ask their president?
my daughter, who's Darren, who's doing the same thing I'm doing, of her dying.
Totally prepared. Prepared. Totally prepared.
Somebody's the president of the United States. The authority is total. And that's the way it's got to be.
But who told you?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
6 feet apart. And it's streaming right now on a Prime channel near you. First of all, great idea to do this. I mean, you took what your circumstances were and turned it into something. You were going out there anyway to the wedding. But you, this is what I love about how you did this. We meet your family, and your family is just charming. Your kids are wonderful. Your grandchild is adorable. But your parents, your mother and your sisters and your family, you stopped along the way to see your family, and we all remember this. My daughter actually moved out at 21 during the pandemic because she couldn't go to work and come back because my husband and I are both older and at risk. And so when she finally did move out to take a job, she couldn't come back in. So when she'd come to visit, we'd stand outside 6 feet apart, you know.
Yeah.
And I got that from you seeing your family, yet your family was just wonderful. How cool it was to meet them.
Yeah, they're pretty fun. They'll kill you and boggle, but they're all right.
And your mother and your mother-in-law are still alive. How lucky are you?
Yeah, I was really worried about my mother-in-law. She's still with us to this day, and you know, stubborn old cuss. And I, you know, I love her to death, but she lives on a farm in Missouri. And, you know, I thought, what better way to show the different aspects of this country other than, you know, better than to visit my own family and my wife's family. You know, I'm born in the city, she's born in the country, and you get to see all sides of America. And I thought it was really important. There was a couple of times like visiting homeless people under a bridge in West Virginia.
Yes.
And seeing how they suffer. And I got to tell you, the whole trip was an eye opener for me.
Oh, I'll bet. Well, that you were on the road during the early days of the lockdown when, you know, there was no one on the road and you encountered traffic and you said, oh my God, this is the first traffic I've seen since we left LA.
Yeah, that's
the right. Whole thing must have been very surreal.
Yeah, the best part of it was when I finally got to get back and have a real meal, because like I said, there wasn't much open, and I hate fast food.
Yeah, and I saw you kept ordering, and it's like, oh my God, that's all that was available.
Yeah, it's, you know, drive-through was open. They gave me hand sanitizer. I was happy.
And Vegas, you had a singular experience because no one has ever been to Vegas where the strip is deserted.
I've been to Vegas many times, and that was just, I felt like it was post-apocalyptic. There was just no other way to describe it. You never see Vegas dark and empty.
Right.
And there it was, dark and empty. I think I said in there, I said, you know, whatever goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas, and nothing was going on in Vegas.
For the first time, nothing's happening in Vegas. Right. Yeah. And yes, but this, you know, and then you'd have these warm and wonderful moments, whether with your family, or talking to the people under the bridge in West Virginia, you talking to people on the street, some people who are just nonplussed by it all. It's like, yeah, I'm not worried. And then you'd cut to the White House scenes and of that idiot, just, you know, instead of trying to help people, talking, well, we're doing a great job. And, you know, you child, don't you dare, or to Peter Alexander, that's the nastiest question. It wasn't a nasty question. It was what do you say to people who are hurting, who are scared?
I like when he told Jim Acosta, you shouldn't be asking me that. You should be asking, how great are we doing?
Right.
You know, you guys are doing so great. And, you know, the funny part about that, Nicole, is I put it together chronologically so you would see what was going on out in the real world versus what was going on in the White House. And the drama built itself. I mean, truth is stranger than fiction, folks. And that was the truth of the matter. This is what he said when he said it. At the same time, I was driving across country talking to people, and his idea of reality, you know, and reality are just ships that pass in the night. He has no clue and had no clue then. completely out of touch. And I think there was nothing more demonstrative of that, more symbolic of that, than those people under a, you know, the homeless people, the guy I talked to with a dog, the people under the bridge, the fly fisherman in Denver, who was, you know, he was worried and he was a Trump supporter, but friendliest, nicest guy in the world. People who just wanted to get tested and couldn't get tested. 48-hour, you know, wait to get testing while the president is saying you can get tested anytime you want. Just go in and test. And this was before masks, and it was before we had, you know, we had any kind of an inoculation against it. So it was very much a different time. And I think there were a couple of people I talked to, you know, some reporters and a kid who worked for me who now works out in Illinois. And, you know, there are people who are saying this is a game changer. Life will change. And it's amazing to see how much it has changed in just 2 years.
Oh, absolutely. And we don't even know the extent of it because
we're coming out of that tunnel and we're seeing, holy crap, you know, this really has changed life. And that trip across country was the beginning of that change. And it was nice to chronicle it. It was nice to put it down. And it's nice to look at it now in a time capsule and say, wow, you know, Trump really was full of shit.
we're not going to stay on this subject long, but I got to ask. So when you watch that, as I did, and it's just over an hour, it's not a long film. It's, I think, 62 minutes. And it goes by fast, and it's you balance it beautifully with your family and all the charming stuff with Trump, with the absurdity that man was ever in the White House and the insanity that went along with him, including some of your run-ins with him. You're just trying to do your job and ask questions, and you got berated. But then you look at the polling today, and I get that some people don't like Joe Biden. I get it. But the doom and gloom that's being put out there by the media, Chuck Todd, it's like there's going to be a shellacking. Do people want to go back to that?
No, and I think that the media sucks.
You and me both. Okay.
And I think that Biden's communication staff sucks. Mm-hmm. And I think that Biden has done a better job than his communication staff. And as example of that, I'll merely look at one incident. I told him from the beginning, I thought in some ways the communication staff they are elitist, they're ignorant, and they're out of touch.
Okay.
And a lot of young kids in it. One incident you can look at. In Poland, 9 words spoken at the end of his speech the other night.
Yeah.
God sakes, this man can't remain in power.
Right.
It was not a half hour after he said it. We all knew what he meant by it. We all had, he didn't say anything that thousands of Ukrainians I had talked to had said, Russians that I had talked to had said, Europeans, Americans, everyone fears because of this man, Putin. So when he said what he said, he was merely expressing the feelings of billions of people on the planet.
That's true.
His communication staff felt the need to clarify that statement, and that caused him problems. Then he had to come back and clarify the clarification that they had made. My question in the briefing room on Monday was, who asked you to clean up that mess? They are so overprotective of Biden, they create problems where none exist. And they're so afraid that people will jump on him for making a gaffe that they don't realize that I just went through 4 years of a complete traitor to this country, not only owning everything that he said, but daring you to say anything against him.
Right.
To hell with that.
Right.
Biden said what he said. Let it stand. You weaken and undercut the man by trying to clarify it. And that's why the Democrats are in trouble.
Oh, that's one reason.
They communicate for crap. Now, I think it's the main reason why Biden is scoring, you know, so low in polls, and thus that translates to problems with the Democrats. They don't have anybody on that communication staff who understands one bit what communication is. For the love of God, the man said what he said. It was great what he said. It needed to be said. It was honest. It was empathetic. He was a father. He was a grandfather. He had just met, as I had, many of refugees many displaced people. What he said was empowering. It wasn't a gaffe. What happened afterwards was.
Well, here's the thing. Because it wasn't in the script, it wasn't in the prepared text, Joe Biden does have a tendency to stick his foot in his mouth from time to time.
I don't think this was one of those cases. I think they'd stuck their foot in his mouth.
Right. If they had let it stand, I mean, I'm not going to argue it with you. But look, I agreed with him. But my first thought was after he said it, I feel like that was strong. And then I thought, I hope that wasn't ad-libbed because I knew that this would turn into a thing, as it did.
And it shouldn't have turned into a thing. And the thing is, look, you can't go tiptoeing around Putin, who right. wants to hold the world hostage, scared that we're going to have nuclear weapons used against us because he wants to play the world for his own personal benefit. This is a bully.
Yeah.
What Putin is Donald Trump with
yeah.
a little more power. You stand up to a bully.
I agree. Now, so do you think our response to what's happening over there is the right one? I mean, look,
yes.
they were so afraid of
yes.
you know, Biden saying the wrong thing that might trigger Putin to do something crazy like set off a nuclear weapon. He's going to do what he's going to do regardless
right.
of what we or Biden or anybody else says or does, right?
And Biden pointed that out, and I pointed that out in my column this week. Look, he went over and showed that NATO is still strong. They increased sanctions against Putin. Then he shows up with the 82nd Airborne going, hey, you think your guys are pretty good? I got the 82nd Airborne right here. There's some badass. Then he goes to Poland and makes a speech a stone's throw away from Russia. That whole trip was to intimidate Putin, to let him know, screw you. You make one false step and you're going to get your butt kicked. That's what that was. The economic sense. So the trip was worth it to show him that, you know, you can't bully us. And that tells Putin that's a message right at Putin that Putin can understand.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you've got the economic sanctions that are strangling the living crap out of Russia. Nobody wants World War III. God, nobody wants there. And there are plenty of people who think we are already in World War III.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, nobody wants to go nuclear.
Right.
So it's a tightrope that you have to walk. And I think Biden has done it so far pretty expertly. And I think those who are criticizing him are listening to poor communications and haven't been over there. And as I have, I'm going to say, I think he's done pretty damn good so far.
Now, so let me ask you this about Ukraine, because as we mentioned, we're still in the throes of this pandemic. Look, China is like shut down now because it's coming back again. How are they? I can't even imagine, on top of dealing with 2 years of this pandemic, then they start getting bombed by Putin next door. How are the people in Ukraine dealing with COVID? Are they like still wearing masks? Is that still a concern, or are they just running for their lives?
Well, most of them are buying coffee and walking around on the street, getting used to the air raid siren. I'm telling you, these are some salty people. I mean, even in Kyiv, I mean, people are trying very hard to lead a normal life. I mean, it got to the point, it's almost like psychological warfare, the air raid sirens in Lviv, just to disrupt your sleep. And after a while, people weren't going to the bomb shelters anymore. And, you know, I felt the need, I saw people, and they're very calm when they did go. I mean, it no big deal. Here we go. Let's go. Meanwhile, I'm running into a guy on a street vendor selling coffee. I figured out what the hell. He's not going in. I'm buying an espresso from this guy, you know, just to support him there. And I'll tell you another thing, Nicole, these people are some of the nicest people, honest to God, I've ever met in my life. In Lviv, for example, the population of that town is now twice of what it was just a month ago.
Sure.
Looks like Manhattan on a busy day.
Wow.
Lots of traffic, huge amounts of traffic. And they're weaving in and out of traffic in instances that would, in this country, prompt a lot of road rage.
But
not there. They wave, they smile, they welcome people in, and they're nice. These people are under the threat of being bombed at any moment.
That's right.
And yet they are polite. They are kind. unless you're speaking Russian, then they don't like you so much. And then, and still trying to go about their life.
Wow.
I think the thing that Putin didn't figure was that he would unite that country the way he did. And they have. And again, I think that's because of Zelensky. I think it's because the mayor of Kyiv, the former boxer, who said, you know, they said he was told he had Russian hit squads coming after him. He says, sure, I'll open up the door. Come on in. You know, these are people, they're not going gentle into that good night. And you got to love them for it.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I said, everybody loves the underdog, and they are the underdog, and they're sticking it to Russia pretty damn good.
Without a doubt. And Zelensky, boy, talk about an underdog story. He's so impressive. By the way, you know, his TV show, they say life imitates art, art yeah. imitates life, called Servant of the People, is now available on Netflix. And we've been watching it, and it's very good. I mean, yeah. even by not, if none of this was happening, it would still be funny. Right.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was a school teacher who somehow becomes elected president of Ukraine, and then he becomes president of Ukraine, and then turns out to be this amazing leader who says, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition. Wow.
Wow. Yeah. And people, you know, people here are going, wow, we finally found a leader.
He's in Ukraine.
Zelensky. Can we elect him here?
And he's the guy who Donald Trump tried to extort that spurred his first impeachment.
Yes.
And why,
with that perfect phone call.
With the perfect phone call. And why is that not being made a bigger deal? This guy who we're all so impressed with, Trump tried
Donald
to get
Trump
him to...
He flipped off Donald Trump pretty much.
Yeah.
Man, he's flipping off Putin. You gotta like it.
I love it. I love yeah. it. Brian, before we run out of time, I gotta ask you, sorry, we're flip-flopping yeah. back, but I wanna go back to the movie, 6 Feet Apart. You're not the only Karam listed in the credits there. So we did get to meet your family. I mean, we met your grandchild, who's, again, adorable. We met your mother, your mother-in-law. We met your sisters. And we kind of saw your sons, but not very much.
Except for Wyatt. You got to meet my youngest because he shot a lot of it.
Okay.
And drove with me across country.
But he was shooting it. So again, he wasn't yep. in much of it. But two of your sons worked on sitcoms in LA that got stopped yeah. because of COVID. Tell me about your sons. Who are they?
Oh, well, all three of them are in the business. And my oldest son, Zachary, actually went with me to Ukraine and shot and is producing that documentary. And my middle son, he just made he made too much money on an NFT that he made.
Really?
He directs music videos and has directed them for a number of artists in LA. And my youngest son, Wyatt, is a writer and for sitcoms and shot that first documentary. So they're all kind of in the business. They all love it. And I'm very proud and happy for all of them.
That's great. And I love that you're working with your sons on it. So,
Nothing funner, nothing better. I told Zachary, I said, look, I've gone to, this is my 12th conflict zone. Wow. And I never felt more comfortable in it than being with someone I absolutely knew. I had his back and he had mine. And that's so important. And smart guy too. So, you know, he's not just, you know, watching my back, but he's also helping make decisions in places where you have to be smart and you have to be very careful.
Right. You want to tell us what shows they were? Would we recognize any of them?
I don't even remember the artists.
Oh, okay.
I'm the worst guy at that. As long as they're off my payroll. At the point where they got off my, Dad, I'm doing something for Aleppo or whatever it is. I'm going, good for you. I don't have to. Let's see. I don't have to pay your rent this month. Good. I'm happy.
And which one has the baby? Who does the baby
that
believe?
Would be the middle one, Brennan. He's got, and I think they've got a Netflix deal or something for a couple of, and I do know, let's see, Zachary just finished a science fiction short, and that'll be coming out shortly. Brennan just finished something called Calabasas Criminals, and that they're pitching to Netflix. And then Wyatt wrote a a sitcom about a weed store in in LA. And I think that's getting picked up.
Oh, so wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it's all original stuff. And I think it's called not the A-Team, but the Street Team. That's what it's called. And it's so a lot of fun.
So they all went out to L.A. on their own? You never lived out there?
No. They went to New York first. Uh-huh. The two oldest, Zachary and Brennan, started in New York. And then they went out to L.A. together. And then when my youngest got out of school, he decided to go out there and join them. They all love it. And they're having fun. And they're off my payroll.
Well, that's the best part.
My wife insists on paying for the phones because she wants to make sure we're all on the phone plan. And those phones are always going to be. That's no control. It's just merely we've got to be in touch with them. Right. This guarantees it.
I have my kid's phone on my plan too. She's not living here anymore, but we have the same. She's on my phone plan. I understand that one somehow. Now, one last thing. I knew I liked you. You're the kind of person I'd hang out with.
Well, thank you, Nicole.
You love dogs. I love that you're talking to somebody along the road on the way from LA to back to DC during COVID. And you're talking to some guy who's in a truck and you see the dog and you're like, hey, buddy, you have to get the dog to come over. Cause that's exactly what I would do. I like dogs better than people.
I do too. I like dogs. They're a lot of fun. You can usually tell if a person's good, whether or not, you know, they have a dog and what the dog thinks of them. If the dog's
That's
looking
right.
at them like this, you know, you go, maybe not.
And you called the dog over and he came from the passenger seat over to say hello. And it's like, okay, this
hi.
Is good.
Hey, how you
this
doing? Good. Good to see you.
Yeah. So, and
you
I know noticed-
we have a lot of dogs in the family, so we're very happy to, you know, and cats. My wife loves the cats. And so we have dogs and cats. And while the kids were young, I think we had a lot of other animals that we don't have anymore either, but still got the dogs and the cats.
Always. So you know that during the pandemic, before the pandemic, I was volunteering at the county animal shelter every weekend trying to get those dogs adopted because they need homes.
Well, and that was one of the stories actually that we tracked in Ukraine. It was really sad. The abandoned and injured animals. And,
oh, God.
That's horrifying. But, you know, you stick that next to the human suffering and you have to prioritize a little bit. I mean, I remember playing. I was in a mission with this 3-year-old boy and his mother and her mother and the father. And the kid was just frowning, horrible frowning. And then I started playing peekaboo with him and he started to brighten up and he smiled. And so we're playing peekaboo. He's having fun. And then he stopped and he got a real serious look on his face. And he said something to his mother in Ukraine. And I said, well, what's he saying? And she goes, he's having fun, but he wants to know, when are the planes going to fly over and drop their bombs? Oh, and so that kid had fled. I mean,
oh
they went
God.
3 days without food. They had no place to stay. Found it called the New Hope Mission in Lviv, and not named after Star Wars, but, you know, certainly had a Star Wars more than happenstance, relation to it.
Mm-hmm.
But just seeing that human suffering and seeing knowing about my colleagues that died and have been shot and killed, and you think of how horrible it is, and then who would injure children? Who would shoot dogs? I mean, seriously,
right.
you're riding through a neighborhood shooting kids and dogs. This isn't an army. These are terrorists.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's all they are.
And I was heartened to see so many people, you know, as they were leaving the cities with their animals, holding their dogs or their cats. And there was a meme that was going around for a few days, probably still is. I don't ever want to hear the story of some person who's moving and can't take their dog with them.
Right.
Look at what these people are doing. In fact, Tanya, in the first place that they were staying, were in a one room with like 6 adults and 3 cats.
Yeah.
Because you bring your animals. Right.
Yeah.
So and during the pandemic, when I got kicked out of the shelter because they kicked everyone out because everything shut down, I started painting and I found out I could paint animals. I paint pet portraits. So here, I'll show you my dog, Jackson. This is Jackson. So.
What kind of dog is that?
He's a Heinz 57. He's got pit. He's got Jack Russell. He's got about 57 different breeds in him. He's just adorable. He's my baby. And
all
so,
right. So before we go,
yes,
I'll show you. I'll do. Wait a minute. if I can find it, this is our. There's the grandson.
Oh, just grandson. Adorable. What is his name? Yeah.
That is Slevin. I didn't Slevin. Name him.
Okay.
not my favorite name, but hey, I love the kid. But the gotcha. But we have this American bully that my son Zachary brought to us. He's 150 pounds soaking wet.
Oh my God.
And oh wait a minute, there's the Jack Russell that we've had forever.
Oh, uh-huh.
And let's see, but
well, you know what? If you send me a photograph of one or two dogs, because I know you got a lot of them. I will paint them for you. You know, the people can't see that because yes, do.
I'll send you the American Bully. Archie
okay.
is his name.
Okay.
You
All
can
right.
put one paw on this shoulder, one paw on that shoulder, and look me straight in the face.
Oh, I would love to. I would love to. I will paint him for you. That's my way of saying thank you for, you know, for coming on the show and the good work you do. It's, you know,
well, thank you very much.
Brian Karam, again, find him at justaskthequestion.com. Listen to the podcast, read the book, Free the Press, and watch the movie on Amazon Prime. It's 6 feet apart. It's so good. It's,
and
you know,
you can look at the weekly column on Salon.com.
And the weekly column on Salon.com. You write alongside my pal Digby. What more could you ask for? All right. Brian Karam, thank you so much.
Nicole, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure Anytime. For me, too. Really appreciate it. You have a great night and say hi to your family for me.
I sure will. And you to yours, too.
Will do. You got it. Thanks so much, Brian. You okay. have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right. And that brings us to the end of yet another fascinating show. It was because Brian was here. First part, I could cut off the very beginning because it was kind of awkward. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. I like to know the people who are on the show. And because Brian's film was so personal, I thought I could ask those questions. So get to know a journalist. All right. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. Lots to talk about. You know what? I'm sorry, it sounds like I'm always ragging on the Democrats, but they're doing it again. Can I tell you, Missouri, we have the perfect Senate candidate in Lucas Kuntz. The Democratic Party is getting behind a Claire McCaskill clone. I'm not kidding. Howie will tell you all about it tomorrow. It's frustrating as hell, but we got to save the country. Because I know what's on the horizon and it's not pretty. All right, I'll leave you with the news. I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening, everyone. Watch Brian's movie. I promise it's really good. It'll make you feel good. All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Vladimir Putin's unprovoked, deadly war on Ukraine is in its second month. We have a Supreme Court nominee in the middle of the confirmation process, a new presidential budget, COVID still raging despite our best efforts in wishing it away. Yet the news today is dominated by the former guy. Really? Well, it's a few things. One, White House phone logs show a 7.5-hour gap in the former guy's calls on January 6, 2021, which includes the period of time when a mob of Trump supporters attacked the Capitol, hoping to overturn his election loss to President Biden. From 11:17 a.m. to 6:54 p.m. on that date, there were zero notations on his official phone line. That leaves the House committee investigating the insurrection with no record of Trump's phone activities during the period of time when lawmakers and then Vice President Mike Pence were forced to seek shelter as Capitol Police battled the insurrectionists. Despite the gap, there have been extensive reports about conversations Trump had with allies during the attack. So there's that. There's also the fact that Trump, at a sparsely attended rally in Georgia on Saturday, was slinging the usual conspiracy theories, not a good look, and oops, He did it again. Seriously, in an interview with some outlet called Just the News, the former guy once again gave us a Russia, if you're listening, moment.
Why did the mayor of Moscow's wife give the Bidens, both of them, $3.5 million? That's a lot of money. So now I would think Putin would know the answer to that. I think he should release it. I think we should know that answer. I think Putin now would be willing to probably give that answer. I'm sure he knows.
Seriously? The former guy sending a very clear message to Vladimir Putin once again to release dirt on Hunter Biden? That's what he's asking for, right? By the way, his claim is all unverified allegations that Joe Biden's son received millions of dollars from the wife of Moscow's late mayor. Here's the facts. In the late 90s, Trump tried to work with that same mayor, and he pursued high-profile real estate deals in Russia as recently as 2016. And that's all you need to know. There's more, but I'll spare you. So we'll move on to Ukraine, where there's a very slight sliver of hope. That's because Russia on Tuesday said they'd radically, quote, reduce military activity around the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv and the northern city of Chernihiv. But Russian airstrikes continued overnight in those areas. Meanwhile, Ukrainian representatives have detailed potential concessions on territory Ukraine appeared to have lost to invading Russian forces. Russia said it was prepared to schedule a meeting between Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky once the two sides reach a draft peace deal. So it sounds like they're making progress, right? Well, Ukraine said the two presidents could discuss control over the Donbas region in eastern Ukraine, which has been claimed by pro-Russia separatists and which Moscow no longer considers part of Ukraine. Ukraine is also proposing a 15-year negotiation process on Crimea. That's the Ukraine peninsula that Russia annexed back in 2014. Sounds like progress, right? But there's always a but. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters on Wednesday that they welcomed the fact that Kyiv has sent out its demands for an end to the conflict in written form. But he said that Russia had not noticed anything really promising or that looked like a breakthrough. And he said there was a long period of work ahead. Wow. Well, tell that to your soldiers out in the field. And for its part, the White House is signaling signs of skepticism of any promises issued by Russia, specifically the talks of de-escalation of the invasion. Here's a quote. Administration officials cautioned that while they had seen a recent reduction in Russian attacks around Kyiv and Chernihiv, violence had continued unabated and even grown elsewhere, particularly in southern and eastern Ukraine. Moreover, the official said that the pause near Kyiv might just be a ruse to resupply troops and that the violence could ramp up again at any time. As expected, the FDA has authorized a second COVID-19 booster shot for adults over the age of 50 as soon as 4 months after their initial booster dose. The CDC has also given its permissive recommendation to the move. That means that the agency doesn't outright recommend it, but acknowledges it's something that people can do if they want to. And check this out. A controversial election overhaul effort in Georgia has stalled after a state Senate committee gutted the bill following complaints from both parties that it was complicating their work in an election year. The bill sped through the Republican-led state House earlier this month, but it's now running up against the clock as the Georgia General Assembly is set to adjourn on Monday. And here's the good part. The only part of the bill the state's Senate Ethics Committee chose to keep was a requirement that employers provide time off for workers to vote during the early voting period. I can go along with that. And finally, breaking news, Wednesday morning, Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, said she will vote for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.